obstacle that no one could have the strength for. This was what Mark had warned about, why I shouldn't do this. The dead were a powerful asset, but once called, they were difficult to get rid of. What had he said? Those who danced on the edge of darkness and insanity shouldn't risk this. Go! I shouted, throwing my last bit of strength into the effort. One by one, the phantoms around me vanished. I felt my world settle back into its rightful order. Only when I looked down, I saw that the ghosts had left Dimitri too, as I'd suspected. And just like that, he was on the move again. Damn! My word of the night. I managed to get on my feet this time as he sprinted up the slope. Again, he was slower than usual, but still more than fast enough. I began backing up, never taking my eyes off of him. Getting rid of the ghosts had given me more strength, but not what I needed to get away. Dimitri had won. "Another shadow-kissed effect?" he asked, stepping onto the bridge. "Yeah," I swallowed. "Turns out ghosts don't much like Strigoi."
"You didn't seem to like them much either."
I took another slow step backward. Where could I go? As soon as I turned around to run, he'd be on me. "So did I go far enough for you to not want to turn me?" I asked as cheerfully as I could manage. He gave me a wry, twisted smile.
"No, your shadow-kissed abilities have their uses. Too bad they'll go away when you're awakened."
So, that was still his plan. In spite of how much I'd infuriated him, he still wanted to keep me around for eternity. "You're not going to awaken me," I said.
"Rose, there's no way you can..."
"No!" I climbed up onto the railing of the bridge, swinging one leg over. I knew what had to happen now. He froze.
"What are you doing?"
"I told you, I'll die before I become Strigoi. I won't be like you or the others. I don't want that. You didn't want that once upon a time." My face felt cold as a night breeze blew over it, the result of stealthy tears on my cheeks. I swung my other leg over and peered down at the swiftly moving water. We were a lot more than two stories up. I'd hit the water hard, and even if I survived that fall, I didn't have the strength to outswim the current and get to shore. As I stared down, contemplating my death, I thought back to when Dimitri and I sat in the back of an SUV once, discussing this very topic. It was the first time we'd sat near each other, and every place our bodies touched had been warm and wonderful. He'd smelled good. That scent of being alive was gone now, I realized. And he'd been more relaxed than usual, ready to smile. We talked about what it meant to be alive and in full control of your soul, and what it meant to become one of the undead, to lose the love and light of life in all those you'd known. We looked at each other and agreed death was better than that fate. Looking at Dimitri now, I had to agree.
"Rose, don't!"
I heard true panic in his voice. If he lost me over the edge, I was gone. No Strigoi, no awakening. For me to be turned, he needed to kill me by drinking my blood and then feed blood back to me. If I jumped, the water would kill me, not bloodletting. I would be long dead before he found me in the river.
"Please,"
he begged. There was a plaintive note to his voice, one that startled me. It twisted my heart. It reminded me too much of the living Dimitri, the one who wasn't a monster, the one who'd cared for me and loved me, who'd believed in me and made love to me. This Dimitri, the one who was none of those things, took two careful steps forward, then stopped again.
"We need to be together."
"Why?" I asked softly. The word was carried away on the wind, but he heard.
"Because I want you."
I gave him a sad smile, wondering if we'd meet again in the land of the dead. "Wrong answer," I told him. I let go. And he was right there, sprinting out to me with that insane Strigoi speed as I started to fall. He reached out and caught one of my arms, dragging me back onto the railing. Well, half-dragging. Only part of me made it over. The rest still hung out over the river.
"Stop fighting me,"
he said, trying to pull on the arm he held. He was in a precarious position himself, straddling the rail as he tried to lean over far enough to get me and actually hold on to me.
"Let go of me,"
I yelled back. But he was too strong and managed to haul most of me over the rail, enough so that I wasn't in total danger of falling again. See, here's the thing. In that moment before I let go, I really had been contemplating my death. I'd come to terms with it and accepted it. I also, however, had known Dimitri might do something exactly like this. He was just that fast and that good. That was why I was holding my stake in the hand that was dangling free. I looked him in the eye. I will always love you. Then I plunged the stake into his chest. It wasn't as precise a blow as I would have liked, not with the skilled way he was dodging. I struggled to get the stake in deep enough to his heart, unsure if I could do it from this angle. Then, his struggle stopped. His eyes stared at me, stunned, and his lips parted, almost into a smile, albeit a grisly and pained one.
"That's what I was supposed to say," he gasped out.
Those were his last words. His failed attempt to dodge the stake had made him lose his balance on the edge. The stake's magic made the rest easy, stunning him and his reflexes. Dimitri fell. He nearly took me with him, and I just barely managed to break free of him and cling to the railing. He dropped down into the darkness. Down, down into the blackness of the obe. A moment later, he disappeared from sight. I stared down after him, wondering if I would see him in the water if I squinted hard enough. But I didn't. The river was too dark and too far away. Clouds moved back over the moon, and darkness fell over everything again. For a moment, staring down and realizing what I'd just done, I wanted to throw myself in after him, because surely there was no way I could go on living now. "You have to." My inner voice was much calmer and more confident than it should have been. The old Dimitri would want you to live. If you really loved him, then you have to go on. With a shaking breath, I climbed over the rail and stood back on the bridge, surprisingly grateful for its security. I didn't know how I would go on living, but I knew that I wanted to. I wasn't going to feel fully safe until I was on solid ground, and with my body falling apart, I began to cross the bridge one step at a time. When I was on the other side, I had a choice. Follow the river or the road. They veered off from each other slightly, but both headed roughly in the direction of the city's lights. I opted for the road. I didn't want to be anywhere near the river. I would not think about what had just happened. I couldn't think about it. My brain refused. Worry about staying alive first. Then worry about how you're going to live. The road, while clearly rural, was flat and packed and made for easy walking. For anyone else. A light rain began falling, which just added insult to injury. I kept wanting to sit and rest, to curl up in a ball and think of nothing else. No. 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 The light. I had to go toward the light. That almost made me laugh out loud. It was funny, really. Like I was someone having a near-death experience. Then I did laugh. This whole night had been full of near-death experiences. This was the least of them. It was also the last. And as much as I longed for the city, it was too far away. I'm not sure how long I walked before I finally had to stop and sit. Just a minute, I decided. I'd rest for a minute and then keep moving. I had to keep moving. If by some crazy chance I'd missed his heart, Dimitri could be climbing out of the river at any moment. Or other surviving Strigoi could be coming after me from the manor. But I didn't get up in a minute. I think I may have slept, and I honestly don't know how long I'd been sitting there when headlights suddenly spurred me to alertness. A car slowed down and came to a stop. I managed to get to my feet, bracing myself. No Strigoi got out. Instead, an old human man did. He peered at me and said something in Russian. I shook my head and backed up a step. He leaned into the car and said something, and a moment later, an older woman joined him. She looked at me, and her eyes widened, face compassionate. She said something gentle-sounding and held out her hand to me, cautious in the way one would be when approaching a feral animal. I stared at her for several heavy seconds, and then pointed at the purple horizon. "Novosibirsk?" I said. She followed my gesture and nodded.
Novosibirsk.
She pointed to me and then to the car.
Novosibirsk.
I hesitated a little longer and then let her lead me into the back seat. She took off her coat and laid it over me, and I noticed then that I was soaked from the rain. I had to be a mess after everything I'd been through tonight. It was a wonder they'd even stopped. The old man began driving again, and it occurred to me I could have just gotten in a car with serial killers. But then, how would that be any different from the rest of my night? The mental and physical pain were starting to drag me under, and with my last effort, I wet my lips and choked out another gem from my Russian vocabulary.
Pozvanit?
The woman looked back at me in surprise. I wasn't sure if I had the word right. I might have just asked for a payphone instead of a cell phone. Or maybe I'd asked for a giraffe, but hopefully the message came through regardless. A moment later, she reached into her purse and handed me a cell phone. Even in Siberia, everyone was wired. With shaking hands, I dialed the number I now had memorized. A female voice answered.
Allô?
Sydney? This is Rose. Chapter 27. I didn't recognize the guy Sydney sent to meet us when we reached Novosibirsk, but he had the same golden tattoo that she did. He was sandy-haired and in his 30s, and human, of course. He looked competent and trustworthy, and as I leaned against the car, he laughed and spoke to the elderly couple like they'd been best friends forever. There was a professional and reassuring air about him, and soon they were smiling too. I'm not sure what he told them, maybe that I was his wayward daughter or something, but they apparently felt good enough to leave me in his hands. I supposed with their jobs, the alchemist's charm in action. When the old man and woman drove off, his demeanor shifted slightly. He didn't seem as cold as Sydney initially had, but there was no laughing or joking with me. He'd become distinctly businesslike, and I couldn't help but think of the stories of Men in Black, the people who cleaned up after extraterrestrial encounters in order to keep the world ignorant of the truth.
"Can you walk?"
he asked, eyeing me up and down. "Unclear at this time," I replied. It turned out I could, just not very well. With his help, I eventually ended up at a townhouse over in a residential part of the city. I was bleary-eyed and barely able to stay on my feet by that point. There were other people there, but none of them registered. The only thing that mattered was the bedroom someone took me to. I mustered enough strength at that point to break free of the arm supporting me and do a faceplant right in the middle of the bed. I fell asleep instantly. I awoke to bright sunshine filling my room and voices speaking in hushed tones. Considering everything that I'd been through, I wouldn't have been surprised to see Dmitri, Tatiana, or even Dr. Olensky from the academy there. Instead, it was Abe's bearded face that looked down at me, the light making all of his jewelry gleam. For a moment, his face blurred, and all I saw was dark, dark water, water that threatened to wash me away. Dmitri's last words echoed in my head. That's what I was supposed to say. He'd understood that I wanted to hear that he loved me. What would have happened if we'd had a few moments more? Would he have said those words? Would he have meant them? And would it have mattered? With the same resolve I'd mustered before, I parted the water swirling in my mind, ordering myself to push aside last night as long as I could. I would drown if I thought about it. Now, I had to swim. Abe's face came back into focus.
"Greetings, Zmei," I said weakly.
Somehow him being here didn't surprise me. Sydney would have had to tell her superiors about me, who in turn would have told Abe.
"Nice of you to slither on in."
He shook his head, wearing a rueful smile.
"I think you've outdone me when it comes to sneaking around dark corners. I thought you were on your way back to Montana."
"Next time, make sure you write a few more details into your bargains. Or just pack me up and send me back to the U.S. for real."
"Oh," he said, "that's exactly what I intend to do."
He kept smiling as he said it, but somehow I had a feeling he wasn't joking. And suddenly, I no longer feared that fate. Going home was starting to sound good.
Mark and Oksana walked over to stand beside him. Their presence was unexpected, but welcome. They smiled, too, faces melancholy, but relieved. I sat up in bed, surprised I could move at all.
You healed me, I said to Oksana. I still hurt, but I don't feel like I'm going to die, which I have to think is an improvement.
She nodded.
I did enough to make sure you weren't in immediate danger. I figured I could do the rest when you woke up.
I shook my head. No, I'll recover on my own. I always hated it when Lyssa healed me. I didn't want her wasting the strength on me. I also didn't want her inviting spirit side effects.
Lyssa.
I jerked the covers off of me. Oh my God, I have to get home, right now. Immediately, three pairs of arms blocked my way.
Hold on, said Mark. You aren't going anywhere. Oksana only healed you a little. You're a long way from being recovered.
And you still haven't told us what happened, said Abe,
eyes as shrewd as ever. He was someone who needed to know everything, and the mysteries around me probably drove him crazy.
There's no time! Lyssa's in trouble! I have to get back to school!
It was all coming back to me. Lyssa's erratic behavior and crazy stunts, driven by some kind of compulsion, or super compulsion, I supposed, seeing as Avery had been able to shove me out of Lyssa's head.
Oh, now you want to go back to Montana, exclaimed Abe. Rose, even if there was a plane waiting for you in the other room, that's a 20-hour trip at minimum, and you're in no condition to go anywhere.
I shook my head, still trying to get on my feet. After what I'd faced last night, this group wasn't that much of a threat. Well, maybe Mark was, but I could hardly start throwing punches. And yeah, I still wasn't sure what Abe could do.
You don't get it. Someone's trying to kill Lyssa, or hurt her, or...
Well, I didn't really understand what Avery wanted. All I knew was that Avery had somehow been compelling Lyssa to do all sorts of reckless things. She had to be amazingly strong in spirit to not only manage those feats but also keep it hidden from Lyssa and Adrian. She'd even created a false aura to hide her golden one. I had no idea how that magnitude of power was possible, particularly considering that Avery's fun-loving personality could hardly be called insane. Whatever her scheme, Lyssa was at risk. I had to do something. Removing Abe from the equation, I looked up at Mark and Oksana pleadingly.
It's my bondmate, I explained. She's in trouble. Someone's trying to hurt her. I have to go to her. You understand why I have to?
And I saw in their faces that they did understand. I also knew that in my situation, they try exactly the same thing for each other. Mark sighed.
Rose, we'll help you get to her, but we can't do it now.
We'll contact the school, said Abe, matter-of-factly. They'll take care of it.
Right. And how exactly would we do that? Call up Headmaster Lazar and tell him his party girl daughter was actually corrupting and controlling people with psychic powers and that she needed to be locked up for Lyssa's and everyone else's good? My lack of an answer seemed to make them think they'd convinced me, Abe in particular.
With Oksana's help, you'd probably be in good enough condition to leave tomorrow, he added. I can book a morning flight the next day.
Will she be all right until then?
Oksana asked me gently.
I don't know.
What could Avery do in 2 days' time? Alienate and embarrass Lyssa further? Horrible things, but not permanent or life-threatening. Surely she'd be okay that long, right?
Let me see.
I saw Mark's eyes widen slightly as he realized what I was about to do. Then, I saw nothing in the room anymore because I was no longer there. I was in Lyssa's head. A new set of sights settled in around me. And for half a second, I thought I stood on the bridge again and was looking down into black waters and a cold death. Then I gained a grip on what I saw, or rather, what Lyssa saw. She was standing on the ledge of a window in some building on campus. It was nighttime. I couldn't tell offhand which building it was, but it didn't matter. Lyssa was on what appeared to be the 6th floor, standing there in high heels laughing about something while the dark ground threatened below. Behind her, I heard Avery's voice.
Lyssa, be careful! You shouldn't be up there!
But it had the same double meaning that permeated everything Avery did.
Even as she said those words of caution, I could feel a reckless drive within Lyssa. Something telling her that it was okay to be where she was and not to worry so much. It was Avery's compulsion. Then, I felt that brushing of my mind and the annoyed voice. You again? I was forced back out, back to the bedroom in Novosibirsk. Abe was freaking out, apparently thinking I had gone into some catatonic fit, and Mark and Oksana were attempting to explain to him what had happened. I blinked and rubbed my head as I gathered myself, and Mark breathed a sigh of relief.
It's much stranger watching someone do that than it is doing it myself.
She's in trouble, I said, attempting to get up again. She's in trouble, and I don't know what to do. They were right in saying there was no way on earth I could get to Lyssa anytime soon. And even if I followed Abe's suggestion and contacted the school, I didn't know for sure where Lyssa was at, or even if anyone there would believe me. I thought about jumping back in and trying to read Lyssa's location from her mind, but Avery would likely throw me out again. From what I had briefly felt, Lyssa didn't have her cell phone on her. No surprise. There were strict rules about having them in classes, so she usually left hers in her dorm room. But I knew someone who would have his, and who would believe me.
Does anyone have a phone?
I asked. Abe gave me his, and I dialed Adrian's number, surprised I had it memorized. Adrian was mad at me, but he cared about Lyssa. He would help her, no matter his grudge toward me. And he would believe me when I tried to explain a crazy spirit-induced plot. But when the other end of the line picked up, it was his voicemail that answered, not the man himself.
I know how devastated you must be to miss me, his cheery voice said. But leave a message and I'll try to ease your agony as soon as possible.
I disconnected, feeling lost. Suddenly, I looked up at Oksana as one of my crazier ideas came to mind.
You can do that thing where you actively go in someone's mind and touch their thoughts, right? Like you did to me?
She grimaced slightly.
Yes, but it's not something I'd like to do. I don't think it's right.
Can you compel them once you're in there?
She looked even more disgusted.
Well, yes, of course. The two things are actually very similar. But reaching in someone's mind is one thing, and forcing them into some unwanted behavior is an entirely different matter.
My friend is about to do something dangerous, I said. It could kill her. She's being compelled, but I can't do anything about it. The bond won't let me actively reach her. I can only watch. If you could reach inside my friend's head and compel her out of danger.
Oksana shook her head.
Supposing morals weren't an issue, I can't reach into someone who's not actually here, let alone someone I've never met.
I raked a hand through my hair, panic setting in. I wished Oksana knew how to walk dreams. That would at least give her the long-distance capability. All of these spirit powers seemed to be one-off from each other, each having some additional nuance. Someone who could dream walk might be able to take the next step and visit someone awake. An even crazier idea came to me. This was a groundbreaking day.
Oksana, you can reach into my mind, right?
Yes, she reaffirmed.
If I was in my bondmate's head at the time, could you reach into me and then reach into her mind? Could I, like, be the link between you guys?
I've never heard of anything like that, murmured Mark.
That's because we've never had this many spirit users and shadow-kissed around before, I pointed out.
Abe, understandably, looked completely lost. A shadow fell over Oksana's face.
I don't know.
Either it works or it doesn't, I said. If it doesn't, then there's no harm done. But if you can reach her through me, you can compel her.
She started to speak and I cut her off.
I know, you think it's wrong, but this other spirit user, she's the one who's wrong. All you have to do is compel Lyssa out of danger. She's ready to jump out a window. Stop her now, then I'll get to her in another day or so and fix things.
And by fix things, I meant ruin Avery's pretty face with a black eye. In my bizarre life, I'd grown pretty used to people, especially adults, rejecting my outlandish ideas and proclamations. I'd had a hell of a time convincing people that Victor had kidnapped Lyssa, and an equally hard time making the guardians believe the school was under attack. So when situations like this happened, part of me almost expected resistance. But the thing was,
As stable as they were, Oksana and Mark had been fighting with Spirit for most of their lives. Crazy was kind of par for the course for them, and after a moment, she didn't argue any further.
All right, she said. Give me your hands.
What's going on?
Asked Abe, still totally clueless. I took a small amount of satisfaction in seeing him out of his league for a change. Mark murmured something to Oksana in Russian and kissed her on the cheek. He was warning her to be careful, not condemning her for her choice. I knew he'd want the same thing if she were in Lissa's place. The love that flashed between them was so deep and so strong that I nearly lost my resolve to do this. That kind of love reminded me of Dmitri, and if I allowed myself to think about him for even a moment more, I was going to relive last night. I clasped Oksana's hands, a knot of fear coiling in my stomach. I didn't like the idea of someone being in my head, even though that was a hypocritical sentiment for someone who was constantly traveling into her best friend's mind. Oksana gave me a small smile, though it was obvious she was as nervous as me.
I'm sorry, she said. I hate doing this to people.
And then I felt it. The same thing that had happened when Avery pushed me out. It was like the actual physical sensation of someone touching my brain. I gasped, looking into Oksana's eyes as waves of heat and cold ran through me. Oksana was in my head.
Now go to your friend, she said.
I did. I focused my thoughts into Lissa and found her still standing on the window's ledge. Better she was there than on the ground, but I still wanted her off and back in the room before something bad happened. That wasn't for me to do, however. I was the taxi, so to speak. Oksana was the one who had to literally talk Lissa off the ledge. Only I had no indication the other woman had come with me. When I jumped to Lissa's mind, I'd lost that sense of Oksana. No more tickling of the mind. Oksana? I thought. Are you there? There was no response. Not from Oksana, at least. The answer came from a very unexpected source. Rose? It was Lissa's voice that spoke in my mind. She froze her position in the window and abruptly cut off whatever she'd been laughing about with Avery. I felt Lissa's terror and confusion as she wondered if she was imagining me. She peered around the room, her eyes passing over Avery. Avery recognized something was going on, and her face hardened. I felt the familiar sense of her presence in Lissa's mind and wasn't surprised when Avery tried to shove me out again. Except, it didn't work. Avery kicking me out in the past had always felt like an actual shove. I got the impression that when she tried it now, it felt like hitting a brick wall to her. I wasn't so easy to push around anymore. Oksana was with me somehow, lending her strength. Avery was still in Lissa's line of sight, and I saw those adorable blue-gray eyes go wide with shock that she couldn't control me. Oh, I thought. It's on, bitch.
Rose?
Lissa's voice was there again.
Am I going crazy?
Not yet, but you have to get down. Right now. I think Avery's trying to kill you.
Kill me?
I could feel and hear Lissa's incredulity.
She'd never do that.
Look, let's not argue it for now. Just get out of the window and call it good. I felt the impulse in Lissa, felt her shift and start to put one foot down. Then it was like some core part of her self-stopped her. Her foot stayed where it was and slowly began to grow unsteady. That was Avery at work. I wondered if Oksana, lurking in the background of this bond, could overpower that compulsion. No, Oksana wasn't active here. Her spirit powers had somehow gotten me into actively communicating with Lissa, but she was remaining passive. I'd expected to be the bridge and thought Oksana would jump to Lissa's mind and compel her. The situation was reversed, though, and I didn't actually have compulsion powers. All I had was legendary wit and powers of persuasion. Lissa, you have to fight Avery, I said. She's a spirit user, and she's compelling you. You're one of the strongest compulsion users I know. You should be able to fight her. Fear answered me.
I can't compel right now.
Why not?
Because I've been drinking.
I mentally groaned. Of course. That was why Avery was always so quick to supply Lissa with alcohol. It numbed spirit, as demonstrated in Adrian's frequent indulgences. Avery had encouraged the drinking so that Lissa's spirit abilities would weaken and give her less resistance. There were a number of times Lissa hadn't been able to gauge exactly how much Avery was drinking. In retrospect, Avery must have been doing a fair amount of faking.
"Then use ordinary willpower," I told her. "It's possible to resist compulsion."
It was true. Compulsion wasn't an automatic ticket to world domination. Some people were better at resisting it than others, though a Strigoi or spirit user certainly complicated matters. I felt Lissa build up her resolve, felt her repeat my words over and over, that she had to be strong and step back off the ledge. She worked to push away that impulse Avery had implanted, and without knowing how, I suddenly found myself pushing on it as well. Lissa and I joined our strength together and started shoving Avery out. In the physical world, Avery and Lissa's gazes were locked as the psychic struggle continued. Avery's face showed hard concentration that suddenly became overlaid with shock. She'd noticed me fighting her too. Her eyes narrowed, and when she spoke, it was me she addressed and not Lissa.
"Oh," Avery hissed, "you do not want to mess with me."
Didn't I? There was a rush of heat and that feeling of someone reaching into my mind. Only it wasn't Oksana. It was Avery, and she was doing some serious investigation of my thoughts and memories. I understood now what Oksana meant about it being invasive and a violation. It wasn't just looking through someone's eyes. It was spying on their most intimate thoughts. And then, the world around me dissolved. I stood in a room I didn't recognize. For a moment, I thought I was back in Galena's estate. It certainly had that rich, expensive feel to it. But no. After a moment's examination, I realized this wasn't the same at all. The furnishings were different. Even the vibe was different. Galena's home had been beautiful, but there had been a cold, impersonal feel to it. This place was inviting and clearly well-loved. The plush couch had a quilt thrown haphazardly in its corner, as though someone, or maybe two someones, had been cuddling underneath it. And while the room wasn't messy, exactly, there were scattered objects, books, framed photos, that indicated this room was actually used and wasn't just for show. I walked over to a small bookshelf and picked up one of the framed photos. I nearly dropped it when I saw what it was. It was a picture of Dimitri and me, but I had no memory of it. We stood arm in arm, leaning our faces together to make sure we both got in the shot. I was grinning broadly, and he too wore a joyous smile, one I'd hardly ever seen on him. It softened some of the protective fierceness that usually filled his features and made him look sexier than I'd ever imagined. A piece of that soft brown hair had slipped his ponytail and lay on his cheek. Beyond us was a city that I immediately recognized, St. Petersburg. I frowned. No, this was definitely a picture that couldn't exist. I was still studying it when I heard someone walk into the room. When I saw who it was, my heart stopped. I set the photo back on the shelf with shaking hands and took a few steps back. It was Dimitri. He wore jeans and a casual red t-shirt that fit the lean muscles of his body perfectly. His hair was down loose and slightly damp, like he'd just gotten out of the shower. He held two mugs and chuckled when he saw me.
"Still not dressed?" he asked, shaking his head. "They're going to be here any minute."
I looked down and saw that I wore plaid flannel pajama bottoms and a tank top. He handed me the mug and I was too stunned to do anything but take it. I peered into it, hot chocolate, and then looked up at him. There was no red in his eyes, no evil on his face. Only gorgeous warmth and affection. He was my Dimitri, the one who'd loved and protected me, the one with a pure heart and soul.
Who's coming?
I asked.
Lissa and Christian, they're coming for brunch.
He gave me a puzzled look.
Are you okay?
I looked around, again taking in the comforting room. Through a window I saw a backyard filled with trees and flowers. Sunshine spilled through onto the carpet. I turned back to him and shook my head.
What is this? Where are we?
His confused expression now turned into a frown. Stepping forward, he took my mug and set his and mine on the shelf. His hands rested on my hips, and I flinched but didn't break away. How could I when he looked so much like my Dimitri?
"This is our house," he said, drawing me near. "In Pennsylvania."
"Pennsylvania? Are we at the royal court?" He shrugged.
"A few miles away."
I slowly shook my head. "No, that's not possible. We can't have a home together, and definitely not so close to the others. They'd never let us. If in some crazy world Dimitri and I lived together, we'd have to do it in secret, somewhere remote, like Siberia."
"You insisted," he said with a small smile. "And none of them care. They accepted. Besides, you said we had to live near Lyssa."
My mind reeled. What was going on? How was this possible? How could I be living with Dimitri, especially so near Maroi? This wasn't right. And yet, it felt right. Looking around, I could see how this was my home. I could feel the love in it, feel the connection Dimitri and I had to it. But how could I actually be with Dimitri? Wasn't I supposed to be doing something else? Wasn't I supposed to be somewhere else?
"You're Strigoi," I said at last.
"No, you're dead. I killed you." He ran a finger along my cheek, still giving me that rueful smile.
"Do I look like I'm dead? Do I look Strigoi?"
"No. He looked wonderful, and sexy, and strong. He was all the things I remembered, all the things I loved." "But you were." I trailed off, still confused. This wasn't right. There was something I had to do, but I still couldn't remember. "What happened?" His hand returned to my hip, and he pulled me into a tight embrace.
"You saved me," he murmured into my ear. "Your love saved me, Rosa. You brought me back so that we could be together."
Had I? I had no memory of that either. But this all seemed so real, and it felt so wonderful. I'd missed his arms around me. He'd held me as a Strigoi, but it had never felt like this. And when he leaned down and kissed me, I knew for sure he wasn't a Strigoi. I didn't know how I could have ever deluded myself back at Galena's. This kiss was alive. It burned within my soul, and as my lips pressed more eagerly into his, I felt that connection, the one that told me there was no one else in the world for me except him. Only, I couldn't shake the feeling that I wasn't supposed to be here. But where was I supposed to be? Lyssa. Something with Lyssa. I broke the kiss but not the embrace. My head rested against his chest.
"I really saved you?"
"Your love was too strong. Our love was too strong. Not even the undead could keep us apart."
I wanted to believe it, desperately, but that voice still nagged in my head. Lyssa. What about Lyssa? Then it came to me. Lyssa and Avery. I had to save Lyssa from Avery. I jerked away from Dimitri, and he stared in surprise.
"What are you doing?"
"This isn't real," I said. "This is a trick. You're still Strigoi. We can't be together. Not here. Not among the Maroi."
"Of course we can."
There was hurt in his deep brown eyes, and it tore at my heart.
"Don't you want to be with me?"
"I have to go back to Lyssa."
"Let her go," he said, approaching me again. "Let all of it go. Stay here with me. We can have everything we ever wanted, Rose. We can be together every day. Wake up together every morning."
"No." I stepped further back. I knew if I didn't, he would kiss me again, and then I'd truly be lost. Lyssa needed me. Lyssa was trapped. With each passing second, the details about Avery were coming back to me. This was all an illusion.
"Rose," he asked. There was so much pain in his voice. "What are you doing?"
"I'm sorry," I said, feeling on the verge of tears. "Lyssa, I had to get to Lyssa." "This isn't real. You're gone. You and I can never be together. But I can still help her."
You love her more than me?
Lyssa had asked me almost the same thing when I'd left to hunt Dimitri. My life was doomed to always be about choosing between them.
I love you both, I replied.
And with that, I used all of my will to push myself back to Lyssa, wherever she was, and tear away from this fantasy. Honestly, I could have spent the rest of my days in that make-believe world, being with Dimitri in that house, waking up with him each morning like he'd said. But it wasn't real. It was too easy. And if I was learning anything, it was that life wasn't easy. The effort was excruciating, but suddenly, I found myself looking back at the room at St. Vladimir's. I focused on Avery, who was staring me and Lyssa down. She'd pulled out the memory that tormented me most, attempting to confuse me and tear me from Lyssa with a fantasy of what I wanted more than anything else in the world. I'd fought Avery's mind trap and felt pretty smug about it, despite the ache in my heart. I wished I could communicate directly with her and make a few comments about what I thought of her and her game. That was out of the question, so instead, I threw my will in with Lyssa's once more, and together, we stepped down off the ledge and onto the room's floor. Avery was visibly sweating, and when she realized she'd lost the psychic tug of war, her pretty face turned very ugly.
Fine, she said. There are easier ways of killing you off.
Reed suddenly entered the room, looking as hostile as ever. I had no idea where he'd come from, or how he'd known to show up right then, but he headed straight toward Lyssa, hands reaching out. That open window loomed behind her, and it didn't take a genius to guess his intentions. Avery had tried to get Lyssa to jump by using compulsion. Reed was just going to push her. A mental conversation flew between Lyssa and me in the space of a heartbeat. Okay, I told her. Here's the situation. We're going to have to do a little role reversal.
What are you talking about?
Fear flooded her, which was understandable, seeing as Reed's hands were seconds away from grabbing her. Well, I said, I just did the psychic power struggle, which means you've got to do the fighting, and I'm going to show you how. Chapter 28 Lyssa didn't have to say anything to express her shock. The feelings of utter astonishment pouring into me said more than any words could have. I, however, had one important word for her. Duck! I think it was her surprise that made her respond so quickly. She dropped to the floor. The movement was clumsy, but it removed her body from Reed's direct attack and put her mostly out of range of the window. He still collided with her shoulder and the side of her head, but it only bumped her and caused a little pain. Of course, a little pain meant totally different things to us. Lyssa had been tortured a couple of times, but most of her battles were mental. She'd never been in a one-on-one physical confrontation. Getting thrown against walls was an average occurrence for me, but for her, a small swipe to the head was monumental. Crawl away, I ordered. Get away from him and the window. Head for the door if possible. Lyssa started moving on her hands and feet, but she was too slow. Reed caught hold of her hair. I kind of felt like we were playing a game of telephone. With the delay in me giving direction and her figuring out how to respond, I might as well have been passing the message through five people before it got to her. I wished I could control her body like a puppeteer, but I was no spirit user. It's going to hurt, but turn around as best you can and hit him. Oh, it did hurt. Trying to turn her body meant his hold on her hair tugged that much more painfully. She managed it reasonably well, though, and flailed out at Reed. Her hits weren't that coordinated, but they surprised him enough that he let go of her hair and tried to fend her off. That's when I noticed he wasn't overly coordinated either. He was stronger than her, true, but he obviously had no combat training short of basic hits and throwing his weight around. He'd come to just push her out the window and be done with it. Get away if you can. Get away if you can. She scrambled across the floor, but unfortunately, her escape path didn't give her access to the door. Instead, she backed further into the room until her back hit a rolling desk chair. Grab it. Hit him with it. Easier said than done. He was right there, still trying to grab her and jerk her to her feet. She caught hold of the chair and tried to roll it into him. I'd wanted her to pick it up and hit him with it, but that wasn't quite so easy for her.
She did, however, manage to get to her feet and get the chair between them. I directed her to keep hitting him with it in an effort to get him to retreat. It worked a little, but she didn't quite have the force to truly damage him. Meanwhile, I half expected Avery to join in the fight. It wouldn't have taken much effort to assist Reed in subduing Lissa. Instead, out of the corner of Lissa's eye, I saw Avery sitting perfectly still, her eyes unfocused and slightly glazed over. Okay, that was weird, but I had no complaints about her being out of the conflict. As it was, Lissa and Reed were in a stalemate, one I had to get her out of. "You're on the defensive," I said. "You need to take the attack to him." I finally got a direct answer back.
What? I can't do anything like that. I have no clue how.
I'll show you. Kick him, preferably between the legs. That'll take down most guys. Without words, I tried to send the feelings into her, teaching her the right way to tense muscles and strike out. Steeling herself, she pushed the chair away so that there was nothing between her and Reed. It caught him by surprise, giving her a brief opening. Her leg struck out. It missed the golden spot, but it did hit his knee. That was almost as good. He stumbled back as his leg collapsed underneath him and just managed to grab the chair for support. It tried to roll, which didn't help him any. Lissa didn't need any urging to sprint for the door at that point, except it was blocked. Simon had just entered. For a moment, both Lissa and I felt relief. A guardian! Guardians were safe! Guardians protected us! The thing was, this guardian worked for Avery, and it soon became clear his services went beyond merely keeping Strigoi away from her. He strode in, and with no hesitation grabbed Lissa and dragged her harshly back to the window. My direction faltered at that moment. I'd been an okay coach at showing her how to fend off a surly teenage boy. But a guardian? And that surly teenage boy had recovered himself and joined Simon to finish the job. Compel him! It was my last desperate bid. That was Lissa's strength. Unfortunately, while her earlier drinking had metabolized enough to improve her coordination, it was still affecting her control of spirit. She could touch the power, but not very much of it. Her control was clumsy, too. Nonetheless, her resolve was strong. She drew as much of the spirit as she could, channeling it into compulsion. Nothing happened. Then, I felt that weird tickling in my head. At first, I thought Avery was back on the scene, only rather than someone reaching into me, it was like they reached through me. The power in Lissa surged, and I realized what had happened. Oksana was still there, somewhere in the background, and she was lending her strength again, channeling it through me and into Lissa. Simon froze, and it was almost amusing. He twitched slightly, rocking back and forth as he tried to advance on her and finish the lethal task. It was like he was suspended in jello. Lissa was hesitant to move, for fear of breaking her control. There was also the issue that Reed was not being compelled, but for the moment, he seemed too confused about what was happening to Simon to react.
"You can't just kill me," Lissa blurted out. "Don't you think people are going to ask questions when they find my body shoved out a window?"
"They won't notice," said Simon stiffly. Even the words required effort. "Not when you're resurrected. And if you can't be, then it was just a tragic accident that befell a troubled girl." Slowly he began breaking out of her compulsion. Her power, while still there, was weakening a little. There was a leak somewhere, and it was dripping out. I suspected it might be Avery's influence or simply Lissa's mental fatigue. Maybe both. A supreme look of satisfaction crossed Simon's features as he lunged forward, and then he froze again. A blazing gold aura lit up in Lissa's periphery. She glanced over just enough to see Adrian in the doorway. The look on his face was comical, but shocked or not, he'd picked up enough to target Simon. It was Adrian's compulsion holding the guardian in place now. Lissa squirmed away, yet again trying to keep out of that damned window's opening.
"Hold him!" Lissa cried.
Adrian grimaced.
"I can't. What the hell? It's like there's someone else there."
"Avery," said Lissa,
sparing a brief glance at the other girl. Avery's face had gone pale even for a Maroi. Her breathing was heavy and her sweating had increased. She was fighting Adrian's compulsion. A few seconds later, Simon broke free yet again.
He advanced on Lyssa and Adrian, though his movements seemed sluggish.
Son of a bitch, I thought.
Now what? Demanded Lyssa.
Reed, go for Reed. Get him out of the picture. Reed had been frozen during the struggle with Simon, watching with fascination. And like those of the Guardian, Reed's actions seemed a little sluggish. Still, he was moving toward Lyssa again. Simon had apparently decided Adrian was the immediate threat and was heading that way. Time to see if dividing and conquering would work.
What about Adrian? Lyssa asked.
We're going to have to leave him on his own for a minute. Get to Reed. Knock him out.
What?
But she advanced on him anyway, moving with a determination that warmed me with pride. His face curled into a snarl. He was frantic and overconfident, though, not thinking clearly and still moving in an ungainly way. Once more, I attempted to teach Lyssa without words. I couldn't make her do anything, but I tried to make her feel what it was like to punch someone. How to draw back her arm, curl her fingers in the proper way, build up the strength. After what I'd seen her do earlier, the best I could hope for was a decent approximation of a punch. Enough to keep him off her and create further delay. And that's when something truly beautiful happened. Lyssa socked him in the nose, and I mean socked. We both heard the impact, heard the nose break. Blood came out. He flew backward, both he and Lyssa staring wide-eyed. Never, never would I have thought Lyssa capable of something like that. Not sweet, delicate, beautiful Lyssa. I wanted to whoop and dance with joy, but this wasn't over yet. Don't stop. Hit him again. You've got to knock him out.
I did,
she cried, horrified at what she'd done. Her fist was also in agonizing pain. I hadn't really mentioned that part during my coaching. No, you've got to incapacitate him, I told her. I think he and Avery are bonded, and I think she's taking her strength from him. It made sense now why he'd frozen when Avery drew power to use compulsion, why he'd known to show up when he had. She'd used their bond to summon him. And so Lyssa went after Reed again. She got in two more punches, one of which knocked his head against the wall. His lips parted, and his features went slack. He dropped to the floor, eyes staring vacantly. I wasn't sure if he was entirely unconscious, but he was out of this for the moment. Off to the side, I heard a small cry from Avery. Lyssa turned to Adrian and Simon. Adrian had ceased any attempts at compulsion because Simon was engaged in a full-on attack. Adrian's face showed he'd taken a few hits of his own, and I figured that, like Lyssa, he'd never engaged in this kind of physical combat. Without any need for direction from me, Lyssa strode over and turned on her compulsion. Simon jerked in surprise, not stopping his attack, but caught off guard. Lyssa was still weak, but the walls around him had dropped a little, just as I'd suspected they would.
Help me! Cried Lyssa.
With the momentary lapse on Simon's part, Adrian tried to wield his spirit too. Lyssa felt and saw the change in his aura as the magic flowed through him. She felt him join her in their psychic attack on Simon, and a moment later, I sensed Oksana joining the fray. I wanted to play general and shout orders, but this wasn't my battle anymore. Simon's eyes went wide, and he fell to his knees. Lyssa could sense the other two spirit users, and was a bit surprised by Oksana's presence, and had the vague impression that they were all doing slightly different things to Simon. Lyssa was trying to compel him to stop his attack, to simply sit still. Her brief brush with Adrian's magic told her he was trying to make the Guardian sleep, and Oksana was attempting to get Simon to run out of the room. The conflicting messages and all that power were too much. The last of Simon's defenses fell as all those mixed messages blasted into him, creating a tidal wave of spirit. He collapsed to the floor. With all of their magic combined, the spirit users had knocked him unconscious. Lyssa and Adrian turned to Avery, bracing themselves, but there was no need. As soon as all that spirit had blasted into Simon, Avery had begun screaming, and screaming and screaming. She gripped the sides of her head, the sound of her voice horrible and grating. Lyssa and Adrian exchanged glances, unsure how to handle this new development.
For God's sake, gasped Adrian, exhausted. How do we shut her up?
Lyssa didn't know. She considered approaching Avery and trying to help her, in spite of all that had happened. But a few seconds later,
Avery grew quiet. She didn't pass out like her companions had. She just sat there, staring. Her expression no longer resembled the dazed look she'd had while wielding spirit. It was just blank, like there was nothing in her at all.
What happened? Asked Lyssa.
I had the answer. The spirit flooded from Simon into her. It fried her. Lyssa was startled.
How could it go from Simon to her?
Because they're bonded.
You said she was bonded to Reed.
She is. She's bonded to both of them. Lyssa had been too distracted while fighting for her life, but I'd been able to notice everyone's auras through her eyes. Avery, no longer masking hers, had possessed a gold one, just like Adrian and Lyssa. Simon and Reed had had nearly identical ones, with ordinary colors, ringed in black. They were shadow-kissed, both having been brought back from the dead by Avery. Lyssa asked no more questions and simply collapsed into Adrian's arms. There was nothing romantic about it, just a desperate need on both their parts to be close to a friend.
"Why did you come?" she asked him.
"Are you kidding? How could I not? You guys were like a bonfire with all the spirit you were wielding. I felt it all the way across campus."
He glanced around.
"Man, I have a lot of questions."
"You and me both," she muttered. "I have to go," I told Lyssa. I felt a little wistful at having to leave them. "I miss you. When will you be back?" "Soon."
"Thank you. Thank you for being there for me." "Always." I suspected I was smiling back in my own body. "Oh, and Lyssa? Tell Adrian I'm proud of him." The academy room faded. I was once more sitting on a bed halfway around the world. Abe was looking at me with concern. Mark also was concerned, but he had eyes only for Oksana, who lay down beside me. She looked a little like Avery, pale and sweating. Mark clasped her hand frantically, fear all over him.
"Are you okay?"
She smiled.
"Just tired. I'll be all right."
I wanted to hug her.
"Thank you," I breathed. "Thank you so much."
"I'm glad to have helped," she said. "But I hope I don't have to do it again. It was strange. I'm not sure what role I played there."
"Me either." It had been weird. Sometimes it was like Oksana had actually been there, fighting right along with Lyssa and the rest. Other times, I felt as though Oksana had merged with me. I shuddered. Too many minds linked together.
"Next time, you have to be by her side," Oksana said. "In the real world."
I looked down at my hands, confused and unsure what to think. The silver ring gleamed up at me. I took it off and handed it to her.
"This ring saved me. Can it heal you, even though you made it?"
She held it in her hand for a moment and then gave it back.
"No, but like I said, I'll recover. I heal quickly on my own."
It was true. I'd seen Lyssa heal remarkably fast in the past. It was part of always having spirit in you. I stared at the ring, and something troubling came to mind. It was a thought that had struck me while riding with the old couple to Novosibirsk, when I'd moved in and out of consciousness. "Oksana?" Ostrogoy touched this ring. And for a few moments, while he did, it was like, well, he was still Ostrogoy, no question. But while he held it, he was almost like his old self, too. Oksana didn't answer right away. She looked up at Mark, and they held each other's gazes for a long time. He bit his lip and shook his head.
"Don't,"
he said.
"It's a fairy tale."
"What?" I exclaimed. I looked back and forth between them. "If you know something about this, about Ostrogoy, you have to tell me." Mark spoke sharply in Russian, a warning in his voice. Oksana looked equally determined.
"It's not our place to withhold information," she replied.
She turned to me, face grave.
"Mark told you about the Maroi we met long ago. The other spirit user?"
I nodded. "Yeah?"
"He used to tell a lot of stories, most of which I don't think were true. But one of them, well, he claimed he restored Ostrogoy to life."
Abe,
silent thus far, scoffed.
That is a fairy tale.
What? My whole world reeled. How?
I don't know. He never elaborated much, and the details often changed. His mind was going, and I think half of what he said was imaginary, she explained.
He's crazy, said Mark.
It wasn't true. Don't get caught up in an insane man's fantasy. Don't fixate on this. Don't let it become your next vigilante quest. You need to go back to your bondmate.
I swallowed, every emotion in the world churning in my stomach. Was it true? Had a spirit user restored Estragoy to life? Theoretically, well, if spirit users could heal and bring back the dead, why not the undead? And Dimitri. Dimitri had definitely seemed altered while holding the ring. Had spirit affected him and touched some piece of his old self? At the time, I just assumed it was fond memories of his family affecting him. I need to talk to this guy, I murmured. Not that I knew why, fairy tale or not, it was too late. I'd done it. I'd killed Dimitri. Nothing would bring him back now. No miracle of spirit. My heart rate increased, and I could hardly breathe. In my mind's eye, I saw him falling, falling, falling forever with the stake in his chest. Would he have said he loved me? I would ask myself that for the rest of my life. Agony and grief flooded me, though at the same time, relief was there too. I had freed Dimitri from a state of evil. I had brought him peace, sending him on to happiness. Maybe he and Mason were together in heaven somewhere, practicing some guardian moves. I had done the right thing. There should be no regret here. Oblivious to my emotions, Oksana addressed my last statement.
Mark wasn't kidding. This man is crazy, if he's even still alive. The last time we saw him, he could barely hold up a conversation or even use his magic. He ran off into hiding. No one knows where he is, except maybe his brother.
Enough, warned Mark.
Abe's attention was piqued, however. He leaned forward, shrewd as ever.
What's this man's name?
Robert Derue,
said Mark after a few hesitant moments. It was no one I knew, and I realized how pointless this all was. This guy was a lost cause, and had likely imagined the whole idea of saving Estragoy in a fit of insanity. Dimitri was gone. This part of my life was over. I needed to get back to Lyssa. Then I noticed that Abe had gone very still. Do you know him? I asked.
No. Do you?
No. I scrutinized Abe's face. You sure look like you know some things, May.
I know of him, Abe clarified. He's an illegitimate royal. His father had an affair, and Robert was the result. His father actually included him as part of the family. Robert and his half-brother grew quite close, though few knew about it.
Of course Abe would know about it, though.
Derue is Robert's mother's last name.
No surprise. Derue wasn't a royal name. What's his father's last name?
Dashkov. Trenton Dashkov.
That, I told him, is a name I know. I had met Trenton Dashkov years ago while accompanying Lyssa and her family to a royal holiday party. Trenton had been an old, stooped man then, kind, but on the brink of death. Maroy often lived to be over 100. But he'd been pushing 120, which was ancient even by their standards. There had been no sign or whisper of him having an illegitimate son, but Trenton's legitimate son had been there. That son had even danced with me, showing a great courtesy to a lowly Dompierre girl. Trenton is Victor Dashkov's father, I said. You're saying Robert Derue is Victor Dashkov's half-brother? Abe nodded, still watching me closely. Abe, as I'd noted, knew everything. He likely knew my history with Victor. Oksana frowned.
Victor Dashkov is someone important, isn't he?
Out in their Siberian cottage, she was removed from the turmoil of Moroi politics, unaware that the man who would have been king had been locked away in prison. I started laughing.
but not because I found any humor in the situation. This whole thing was unbelievable, and my hysteria was the only way to let out all the crazy feelings within me. Exasperation, resignation, irony.
"What's so funny?"
asked Mark, startled. "Nothing," I said, knowing if I didn't stop laughing, I'd probably start crying. "That's a thing. It's not funny at all." What a wonderful twist to my life. The only person alive who might know something about saving Strigoi was the half-brother of my greatest living enemy, Victor Dashkov. And the only person who might know where Robert was Victor himself.